ללמוד. In the Kamalai Mil Hamabas, Elsani Voka, Hashu Alti, Mesa, the Naisa, Bakesh, Shivasa, the Naikoya, Mechaya, Lachazos, Benoa, Mother, Noid, Vakabitala, Kisman, Sigabiamira, Yastrini, Bessis, Lovitsu, Yomani, Vieta, Yavim Roshiela, Vaisivi, Vasadis, Fabiolos, the place for Shirava Zamala, the Night, Shrada, Nikolia, Kravak, and even in the Hama, the Vakshivan is left and Naiva. Good morning. Good morning, Akiva. Good morning. Okay, so we'll talk about two Rashis on one pasuk. It's going to be one very, very interesting pasuk. Most of the drama and the interaction of the Bikurim takes place between a person and a Kodesh Baruch Hu. The person delivers his first words, sign of gratitude, sign of accomplishment. He recites these four psukim known as Arami Oved Avi, which are familiar to us from the Haggadah, and Seir Lamach. He's standing next to the Mizbeach. The Kohen is, of course, the facilitator. He enables the Hanacha. The fruits aren't brought on the Mizbeach, because fruits are never sacrificed in the Mizbeach. The Kohen receives the fruit, and it's a ceremony that resembles a karban with the Kohen officiating and enabling, but the conversation and the communication is between a person and a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Rami Ganisa V'Yamar, he's declaring, not even to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, but about, it's a declaration of allegiance, of what you believe in front of the Mizbeach. Before this begins, before the famous pasuk V'Yamisa V'Yamarta, Lifnei Hashem Elokecha Arami Oved Avi, as I just described, two psukim earlier, there's another communication, there's a pre-communication. You address the Kohen, you approach the Kohen, Uvasa HaKohen, Asher Yeh Bayamim Ahim, V'Amarta Elav. You're speaking to the Kohen. Why do you speak to the Kohen before you speak to Hashem? You speak to the Kohen, what are you about to say? I'll share with you in a moment. Then after communicating this message to the Kohen, then you start speaking to Hashem. So what is this pre-communication to the Kohen? So let's listen. You don't pay attention because you're running through the Parsha and you're familiar with the Rami Oved Avi, less familiar with what you say to the Kohen. The Amarta Elav, very strange pasuk. He gadati hayom l'Hashem Elokecha. I'm going to speak to Hashem, your God, Elokecha. Hayom, he gadati hayom l'Hashem Elokecha. Ki vasi el haaretz Hashem ishba Hashem la'avoteinu la'asasun. I arrived in the land that Hashem gave us. Very strange. I'm addressing the Kohen, but I'm not speaking the content of Rami Oved Avi. I'm telling him I've arrived today, and I'm telling your God that I arrived in the land that Hashem gave our fathers. Even the grammar is off. I'm speaking that today I'm going to tell something to your God. I've arrived. Hashem ishbala avotinu. It's a very, very, very strange pasuk, and Rashi knows this. So we'll take a look at two Rashis on this pasuk. One Rashi is, for those who came, Jonathan, those who came a little bit late, there's a pre-communication in this pasuk before Rami Oved Avi. The primary communication in Parshas Kisavo is man speaking before God, reciting these four psukim of Jewish history. But before you recite the Lifnei Hashem Elokecha, you address the Kohen, and you say, today I'm speaking to your God that Hashem brought us to the land of our fathers. Your God to the Kohen, our fathers in collective. Very, very strange pasuk. So Rashi comments, he got it to the Amarta Elav She'enacha Kafoi Tova. Your first communication before you talk about Arami Oved Avi, that you're not ungrateful. Somehow you're trying to communicate to this Kohen that you're not ungrateful. Because you're full of gratitude to Hashem for your financial, in this case, agricultural success. Now why does this message have to be explicit? It's implicit in the entire Bikurim. you've traveled hundreds of kilometers through Yerushalayim. You've lugged all the fruits. As opposed to Maaser Sheni, which you can essentially swap into money and bring money, Bikurim, you have to actually deliver the Bikurim. Not only that, there were great parades and celebrations and ceremonies attending the delivery of Bikurim. Not only that, the Bikurim, unlike Maaser Sheni, Maaser Sheni, while you are arranging all your crops, then you deliver your various tumors and mitzvahs. Bikurim took months and months of anticipation, preparation. You'd have to visit your fields as the first fruits were growing, wrap a little band around the first fruits, witness those fruits as they grew, hope that they grow, deliver them. So the fact that you're grateful is implicit. Why do you have to have a pre-communication to the Kohen? By the way, I'm coming today, you must tell your God that I'm not grateful because he took us into the land of our fathers. Why this pre-communication? So part of it is obviously anything that you articulate consciously carries more power. We're about to start the season of Vidui. Why should a person recite dozens of Viduis? After all, sit quietly, conduct the list internally, mentally, emotionally, maybe write it down. Articulation provides clarity of thought. Thought is always based in words. The more that you articulate, the more you force yourself to generate words and to clothe your ideas with vivid, sharp, and precise connotations and imagery. So it's one thing to feel grateful. It's another thing to convey it verbally and to articulate it, which is why saying thank you and displaying your gratitude is so important, especially since gratitude is a very, very difficult feeling for some people because it can tend to challenge your independence. Everyone wants to feel independent. Gratitude acknowledges dependency, acknowledges frailty, acknowledges need. Sometimes it's very difficult to express. At the same token, you don't just express it to yourself in front of a mirror, so to speak, as Vidui is. You share it with someone else. It's even more difficult. It's one thing to acknowledge your own need and your own dependency to yourself. It's another thing to actually share that in a way that many people find embarrassing. So this is a process of trying, on the one hand, to illustrate gratitude with deeper clarity and precision. Second of all, to say it not just to yourself by articulation, but to convey it to someone else. But there's a third element. And the third element highlights the interplay and the dynamics between these two communications. The ultimate communication, as you'll tell, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Arami Ovid Avi, Vayered Mitzrayma. And this communication where you're telling the Kohen, by the way, I'm here today to show that I'm grateful. The Arami Ovid Avi section essentially is historical slash ideological. You're using this opportunity, success agriculturally, in the Beis HaMikdash to remind yourself of whom you are historically. Arami Ovid Avi wasn't always this easy. Jewish history sometimes is challenged, not just in the days of Yaakov. We descended to Mitzrayim. We suffered, again, not just literally Egypt, but metaphorically, all the challenges that it is to be a Jew in history, which are not incidental to Jewish identity, but are built in Jewish identity. Hashem saves us. V'tzina Hashem l'kina misham. V'yad chazakav z'onitiv of maragavah v'yosos of mosim. Hashem brings us to the land that he promised us, that he promised. Very, very historical, very ideological. You're painting this experience in ideological terms. Anytime you paint experience in ideological terms, you may forget the human element. Because ideology is about ideas. And ideas are generally larger than human beings. You belong to ideas that are larger than you. But then there's a human story. And the human story is, be grateful. Forget which land you're in. You can be in Tina. You can be in Johannesburg. No history and larger drama. Are you thankful to Hashem that you're a successful professional that you can feed your family? When you're in Eretz Yisrael, oh, wow, I'm building the future of my family. Israel is part of some unbroken chain. We're joined to Eretz Yisrael. Everything has that extra dimension, and this has that extra dimension at all, as well. So before that extra dimension sets in and sucks all the air out of the conversation, talk to the Kohen. Before you talk to Hashem, you express a very, very basic human emotion. It's so necessary. The Rabbeinu Bachaya, Talmud of the Ramban, felt that Hakaras HaTov is the core of religious identity. By recognizing all the prosperity and all the welfare that HaKadosh Baruch Hu navigates and delivers to us, Rav Amital, interestingly enough, to show how revolutionary his thinking was, felt that after the Holocaust, Judaism can no longer be pivoted on Hakaras HaTov. It was for that generation, at least, it was unfair to try to train them to be Ovdei Hashem based on Hakaras HaTov, because they'd felt so gutted and so emasculated emotionally by what they had experienced that it wasn't fair. Maybe in our generation there could be a renewal of Hakaras HaTov, because thank God we've received so much. But at least in the Rabbeinu Bechaya's time, the 12th, 13th century, and for many hundreds of years, people felt that Hakaras HaTov. It's a very, very basic, important emotion, not just for the recipient, but this is why you're deflecting it to the Kohen. It's not that Hashem needs your Hakaras HaTov, you're speaking to the Kohen. It's more about your own moral refinement. You're expressing Hakaras HaTov in a verbal fashion before things become ideological. I know, for example, take, for example, in Israel. Many times when we struggle for Israel, and sometimes when tragedies befall, so people run immediately to the ideological aspect. We're fighting for something larger, for Jewish history, serving in the army, defending our borders. But there are real people who suffer real tragedies. And for them, it's not just ideological. You want to try just to be there for them and to console them and to give them as much support as you can. So before the Arami Ovid Avi section starts accelerating, and you're standing and talking to Hashem, and you're reliving Jewish history, and seeing yourself as part of an unbroken chain, and your material success that year is necessary for the advance of Mashiach, and the refostering and reforestation of Eretz Yisrael, first you talk to the Kohen, you express your Hakaras HaTov, and you express it in a way that in no way reflects embarrassment or discomfort. I'll just say one additional Rashi. I plan to talk about three or four Rashis. But you also say, Higadati Hayom, today. It's really Higadati Hayom. So Rashi comments, Higadati Hayom, Pam Achas, Velosh Dei Pamim. You only bring Mikorim once, not multiple times. Now this is a logistical and pragmatic Rashi, because you think as each, because the fruits mature and ripen at different stages. So you think you bring the early fruits. Anyone know the last of the seven medium to ripen? Go outside, look around. I asked the pomegranates, because it will help you solve a famous trick question. Why do we eat pomegranates in Rosh Hashanah? The answer is, they're the last to ripen. And Rosh Hashanah, you only get this if you live in Israel, and you watch pomegranates ripen. And Rosh Hashanah is the end of the agricultural cycle. We thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we free ourselves in agricultural work, to be more dedicated to ideology and tshuva. It's the whole concept. Okay, you want to add the extra simanim of Rimonim and Malay Mitzvah Skirimo, and the Jewish people compare it to the all beautiful Midrashim. But built into Israeli agriculture is the last to ripen. The second last to ripen is the grapes. You probably saw the grapes ripening when you came, and then the pomegranates, because they're more sophisticated fruits, so to speak. They've got compartments and pits, and takes longer for them to grow and to develop. So, you would think, at the beginning of the season, when, well, what ripens first of the seven medium? Come. What ripens first, guys? Let's see if you're able to connect halacha to agriculture.
Wheat.
What? Not really. What ripens before wheat? Plus? Barley. How do we know barley ripens first? Minchas Omer. They deliver the Minchas Omer at the beginning of the ripening season, because Zayin Nisan, because that's ripened first, and then the wheat, and throughout the summer. So these halachas have real agriculture. If you live in Eretz Yisrael, it makes sense. Not just in theory and abstract, what carbon you bring when. The first to ripen is the barley, the last to ripen is the pomegranates. So, of course, pomegranates in Rosh Hashanah is not halacha, it's a minhag. So you think you make multiple trips. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, so not to make one trip. Not to make one trip. But there's something deeper. Sometimes, as strange as it sounds, more is less. So think about people who constantly say thank you. Effusively. They can't stop saying thank you, or they can't stop apologizing. One of the old stories of people constantly apologizing, and the person says, if you apologize one more time, I'm sorry. At a certain point, it just becomes so copious that it becomes devalued, these conversations and these conveyances. You answer saying thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. None of your thank yous mean anything. They're just some habit, just some filler, verbal filler. So, sometimes, saying something too often vacated of meaning. Let me give you an example from a different area, Tehillim. Sometimes if you say Tehillim too often, you say Tehillim for even aspects that are not as tragic or as compelling, then it can deplete the Tehillim of its meaning. Or if you say Tehillim, you know, one of the challenges, a lot of people say Tehillim for lists that are circulating on the internet. But you don't know these people, and you can't really feel as emotional for people you've never met as the people that are really suffering. So you just say Tehillim. So I'm not saying what the solution is, but sometimes with verbal communication that has to elicit an emotional response. Too much frequency frustrates feeling. There's a clash between frequency and feeling. And sometimes when you say thank you to people too often, you're never really saying thank you. Sometimes you just have to go over to someone who haven't said thank you to you repeatedly and just say, I really just want to thank you for being my friend. And I want to thank you for everything you did for me. Because if you just say thank you, thank you, thank you, these short little bursts, you're not conveying anything deep and profound. So when you're saying thank you to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through the experience of Bikurim, which is the Pamachas, I don't think you're more from or more efficient or more grateful by the preponderance of thank yous you offer. It's how meaningful the thank you is. Pamachas, Yigadati Hayom. Come once, say your thank yous, make it meaningful, don't be guilty, you constantly have to be thanking and thanking or apologizing. Say something once and clearly, sometimes you have to say something multiple times. But sometimes people have a nervous habit of trying to repeat things too frequently, and ironically, it can have a boomerang effect, and it can deplete communication and feeling. So these are two Rashis about gratitude. One is articulation to other people. The human element before the ideological element vacuums the entire process. And saying thank you once sometimes is not just sufficient, but saying thank you once, apologizing once, sometimes is more meaningful than devaluing through repetition. Have a grateful Shabbos, everyone. You get to be out of yeshiva, resting, eating, sleeping, and then back to this rigor. Have a good Shabbos, everyone.